at kresge.org.
Good morning. This is the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts. John is here every other Monday at 10 o'clock on WMNF 88.5 FM. Hey, John, how are you?
Pretty good, Rob. You've been dancing around those showers this weekend?
Yeah, I got caught in the rain a couple of times, but it was okay.
Yeah.
How about you?
I tell you, it's just terrible out in Plant City. We just keep getting rain every day. You know, I listen to the forecast and they go, oh, 20, 30%, and we'll get like two or three showers, you know. It's just, it's on and on. And, you know, like we're on one of these little neighborhood, you know, groups, email groups, and it was like over, golly, way over 100, you know, messages of flooding and people stuck in farms and, you know, pulling off the roads. And, of course, the roads are real wet. And, of course, coming into the show today, I'm always looking for, like, hybrid and electric cars on the road. And when I get to M&F, I go, oh, they're all here in the parking lot. And today we're going to be talking about hybrids and electric cars, and we have some great guests, and I can't wait to kind of get to that segment. This is the WMNF Sustainable Living Show, and I'm Farmer John, and Tanya's home today with the kids, but of course Rob's right here going to engineer the program and kind of keep me in step, and Frank Knox will be our phone answerer as usual, and our topic will be electric vehicles. But Rob, maybe first, what's up at 11 o'clock today?
Well, we're going to hear Florida this week, and we're also going to hear from the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County, who's going to talk about tomorrow, which is the last day to vote for everybody in the primary election. So we'll be talking about the primary with the Hillsborough supervisor of elections, and people will be able to call in too and mm-hmm. ask questions.
You know, Sean over the weekend sent me a little thing about his midpoint, and I just didn't bring it. Do you know what Sean's up to at 12 o'clock?
I do. Sean has two topics. He's going to have a former inmate from Lowell Correctional Institution for Women talking about abuse of inmates by guards, and the six people from Occupy ICE Tampa who were arrested on what to expect when they head to court. That's all coming up at 12 noon today on Midpoint.
Okay, and then we have executive sessions, and of course our dear friend Flea will be in here, hopefully, at, 2 o'clock?
Yeah, sometime. Flea will be here. I saw him in the building earlier. Yeah.
Okay, as I say, our topic will be zero-emission vehicles, like electric vehicles, plug-ins and hybrids. But first, a friend of mine just got back from fighting fires out west, and she's going to tell us about her experience. Nancy and Wendell live on a permaculture homestead near Lake Panasoffkee, and that's about 50 miles north of Tampa. She just retired as a land manager from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission. You know, they use prescribed burns to manage Florida native habitats, but Nancy just got back from fighting fires out west. Welcome to WMNF, Nancy Dreyer. Nancy, you there?
Morning.
Well, thanks so much for joining the show. Where were you, a land manager? You're up around Lake Panasoffkee.
Yes, at Half Moon Wildlife Management Area. It's on the Withcoosee River between Wildwood and Inverness.
Cool. And it's how many acres?
It's almost 10,000 acres.
Wow.
A variety of habitats on it, and very popular for hunting and other recreation.
Cool. And it sounds like there's a lot of woodpeckers up there, huh?
Well, the woodpeckers, the endangered woodpeckers, are next door in Citrus County on some part of the Withlacoochee State Forest.
Mm-hmm. And you still kind of do that, volunteer as a pecker counter, right?
Yeah, we call them a pecker checker, yeah. but they're doing pretty well in their upland pine habitat, but there's really very little of that left in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And you actually relocate these woodpeckers, some of them?
We do sometimes, yep, usually towards the southern end of the state. We move them down south. They do get decimated sometimes by hurricanes, so it helps to have them spread out as much as we can.
So, did you volunteer to go out west and maybe kind of tell us about this process that you ended up where, in California?
Yeah, I was part of a 20-person interagency hand crew on the Ferguson fire that was right on the edge of Yosemite National Park. I did not get to see the good stuff in the park. I didn't get to see the giant sequoias, but we built hand line, that fire line by hand with hand tools and chainsaws. We laid hose up and down the mountains. The fire grew from 37,000 acres when we got there to about 97,000 when we left, but it is now completely contained and pretty much over with.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, we had been talking about a lot of dead trees out west and Canada, probably in Alaska as well. There's just millions of dead trees, sort of a cascade effect from drought and then pine and bark beetles coming in. So that's just one more of the tragedies that's occurring out there.
But as a volunteer, you must be, it doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I mean, it must be really hot and you have to carry packs, right?
Yep, you have to carry everything with you, all your water and other things in your pack. It's really dusty and smoky and hot. We are getting paid, though, so it's not, you know, you go on a voluntary basis, but you're being paid, and it's part of the huge cost of wildfires, which are up to $2 billion per year. Mm-hmm. And as most of you have heard, the fires just keep getting bigger. They're up to like 8 million acres per year now, and it was only about 2 million acres back in the 80s for the United States. So it seems to be getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you read a lot about climate change, and it kind of goes in line with what they're predicting and talking about, and I don't think it's going to get any better, and apparently it looks like eventually a lot of these places in our Southwest are going to be kind of like deserts, and there's going to be no kind of return. I mean, there's, you know, like in the old days, you know, we had the Dust Bowl, but they're talking about we're going to have the Dust Bowl, but it's not going to, you know, nothing's ever going to recover, and that's I don't know. It's very, very sad to share that information. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's really crazy what we do. You know, I was going to talk just a little bit about prescribed burns and why they probably don't work out west, do they?
It's so difficult out there, and when you talk about the return too, here in Florida, we do the most prescribed burning of any state by far. We burn over 2 million acres a year in Florida, but everything comes back so quickly, unlike out west where there's just a fire scar for years, and these trees are giant out there and hundreds of years old, but they just have such a hard time doing it. Not only is the landscape just so huge, but pretty inaccessible, hard to put in fire lines, all the steep slopes. So they just really aren't able to do it. Not to mention all the people living, you know, amongst these wild areas that, you know, aren't going to appreciate prescribed fires in their neighborhood. But yes, they can't. There's no way they can ever keep up, especially in California.
Well, Nancy, I know you're kind of an ecologist. Can you think of any answer? I mean, is there any solution for these fires?
Well, there are a lot of solutions, and prescribed burning will help and does help a little bit. on a small scale, also thinning the forest. Unfortunately, environmentalists get blamed for preventing timber harvests out there. I think it's just scapegoating, but thinning the forest would help because that's what the fire does, and they don't get overgrown and clogged and become devastating fires that kill all the trees. But the land does come back, and the vegetation comes back. Yellowstone's a good example of what happens. And, you know, in the long run, it's positive, but it's hard to watch the destruction in the meantime.
Nancy, this is Rob Lori. You know, out west, I've seen whole mountaintops clear cut. And then I've seen kind of more thoughtful forestry practices where maybe some of the older trees are harvested out. Environmentalists, you say, get the blame for preventing kind of thoughtful forestry management. Let's talk about that for a little bit more. I mean, do environmentalists, do they, on the whole, do they oppose all sorts of timber harvesting, or which environmentalists support kind of thoughtful timber harvesting?
I think most environmentalists do support thoughtful harvesting of trees because it does help maintain the forest. And I think it is just trying to blame the environmentalists for it. I hope that clear cutting is a thing of the past and that we've seen that it is damaging, not to mention ugly, but
yeah, where I saw it was in Washington State, and this goes back about 7 or 8 years, where I was driving
through
parts of Washington State, and clearly clear cutting had happened where there were no trees left.
It definitely does, and they try to hide it from public view too. There'll be a view shed. They don't want people to see it. You can see it when you're flying over. But, you know, it just, it's many things that'll help the forest, including, you know, our use of paper and wood. You know, on the Sustainable Living Show, I'm sure we've talked about what we can do at home, you know, sourcing our toilet paper, maybe reducing the amount of wood products that we use, all kinds of ways, I think.
Nancy, what you did had to be incredibly dangerous.
It is a little bit dangerous. I don't feel, rarely do I feel in danger, but any time working with chainsaws and, of course, all the standing dead trees are dangerous. Someone did die on the fire we were on just from a dead tree falling on him. And, you know, for the most part, we're safe. We're not. Some bulldozer operators died on a couple of California fires this year. One of them was 81 years old. But it is dangerous, and it's very expensive, too.
We're talking with Nancy Dwyer, who's a Floridian, but she was just out west fighting fires in California. Nancy, one last thing. You know, sometimes when I see the fire damage here in Florida, you can look at the tops of some trees, and clearly those trees have survived, even though the fire maybe devastated everything at the ground level, like the palmettos and all the brush. How long does it take for a Florida forest to come back after a fire? And how long do you think it's going to take those forests to come back out west?
Yeah, out west, I mean, gosh, we're looking at, you know, things like 50 years. But here in Florida, that palmetto will be back within months. You probably won't even be able to tell there was a fire there a year later. It just has quite a beneficial effect here in Florida, especially in the pine flatwoods. That's what's been decimated in the southeast is the longleaf pine, the old growth, open pine landscapes. And if you'll notice, most of our landscape is taken over by oak. Oaks are wonderful, but that isn't what the landscape used to look like. So there's a lot of plants and animals that need that open pine habitat. But it really does thrive with fire, and the fire keeps the oaks back. Oaks eventually become fireproof, so if you have oaks around your home, you're pretty safe from fire, whereas pines are a different story.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Nancy. Is there anything else that you think might interest our listeners? I'm sure we could probably, you know, Nancy, you're a minimalist, and we're going to have a show on minimalism. And of course, you're a permaculturalist. So I'm sure we could talk all day about topics related to sustainable living. And I know you're one of those people that actually live that life, and you and Wendell. But just real quick that you'd like to say?
Yeah, we've been living without air conditioning, and we've been using our composting toilet for 20 years. We're happy with our lifestyle choices. I must say, right before I left for California, my beloved diesel car died. It was 22 years old, and it got 45 miles to the gallon, so I only had to fuel up less than once a month. So
wow.
I was sort of proud of that. Now, hopefully I will never buy another internal combustion engine again, and our next car can be an electric one. So I'm excited about your next topic.
Great. Well, maybe we can help you out a little bit. Nancy, thank you so much. Nancy Dreyer up there. And what's the name of your farm?
It's Wander.
Wander.
Wendell and Nancy's Dream Eden Ranch.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And people who are going to the conversions might see you there here in the late fall, early winter.
Yes. In December, we'll probably mention it on one of your shows in the future.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Nancy. And we're going to take a little short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. This is WMNF 88.5 FM.
This is the WMNF Sustainable Living Show on WMNF 88.5 FM here in Tampa, Florida. And for the rest of the hour, we'll be talking about electric vehicles, hybrids, and plug-in hybrids. Our guests are the Electric Vehicle Program Associate with the Alliance for Clean Energy, and her work there is to promote electric vehicle ownership. Welcome to WMNF, Dori Larson.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm glad to be here with you.
Great to have you here. And also on the phone is the owner of Tampa Hybrids there in Lusa, Todd Thompson. You there, Todd? Todd?
Yes.
Hey, great to have you back. You were on last year or a year before, and we really appreciate it. And Tampa Hybrids is right there on 41, a little bit north of Tampa.
Correct, in Lusa.
Mm-hmm. And it, I was kind of looking at your Facebook page, Todd, and it sounds like you worked for a couple of car dealerships in the past. And I just kind of wondered where you were working when the first Prius came out. And, you know, having a career in the car industry, what did you kind of think about that?
Well, I was working for a Buick dealership at that time, and probably didn't pay that much attention to it. It was interesting, and it was kind of off my radar for a lot of years. When I started working for myself, I got more interested in them. I first started working for myself, and my background was Buick, Cadillac, GM cars, so that's what I started with, and kind of just stumbled upon a Prius and became more and more interested with them and fascinated just with how reliable they are and, of course, the great gas mileage.
Cool. And Dorothy, you're with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and we've had several of our guests, and a lot of their guests have been here at WMNF, and it's usually about solar systems and solar electric and the solar co-ops. And this is the first time I think we talked to anybody about electric vehicles and trying to promote them. But, kind of maybe the same question to you, like when the Prius came out, did anything kind of, do you kind of remember that? And what were your thoughts maybe about the Prius?
Honestly, I was teaching at the time, and I mean, I knew that there was technology coming out that was kind of exciting, but I was not on my radar as well.
Mm-hmm. And the Prius has a really kind of interesting history, but it was kind of like the first car that was, like a production car. It was getting, what do they get, about 50 miles a gallon, Todd?
Give or take, Honda was actually the first one into the United States with them, with the Insight.
Really? Uh-huh. And I'd say as far as, of course, the Insight was a two-seater, right? The first one?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And the Prius, the Toyota Prius, was kind of like the first four-door car, very practical car. And I think it was it the first to have regenerative braking, Todd?
I believe that the Honda has that as well, but
okay.
It's definitely a much more mainstream car to appeal to more people.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we could talk a little bit of some of the newer models and kind of what's going on, Dory. The electric vehicles, I guess, is maybe 5 or 6 years since the first one came out.
Yes, so the first Nissan Leaf came out in 2011.
Okay.
And since then, we've seen an explosion of them and also an explosion of what is to come in terms of what the manufacturers have committed their money for research and development and promising tremendous amount of line of electric vehicles. So over 125 models to be coming out by 2022.
Wow, cool. And Todd, I mean, as a used car dealer, you're seeing more and more, and you're selling more and more electric vehicles, right?
Well, we're kind of unique. We specialize in hybrids and electrics only. I don't do anything other than that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're seeing a lot more electric vehicles becoming available.
Right. When we first started doing this, the Prius and the Hondas were the only cars we were stocking, and we've kind of gone away from the Hondas for various reasons, but we've really gotten into the Nissan Leaf, BMW i3s, Chevy Volts, and then there's some other plug-in hybrids. Some of the Ford models are very good as well.
Mm-hmm. And I always kind of like your perspective, because actually you end up with the used ones, and, have you been seeing a lot of problems, or how does your feel about these EVs?
Hybrids and electric cars are probably some of the most reliable cars manufactured, because you've eliminated the most problematic part of the car, which is your gas engine. And on a hybrid, they only run 70% of the time and typically run at much lower RPM.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And Dory, I just kind of wonder, people are always kind of questioning, like, are they really environmental? They go, oh, well, you got a battery and those kind of things. Well, the net in the end result of owning like a hybrid and an electric vehicle, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer to us, but a lot of people have a lot of questions about them.
It is a great question. And the Union of Concerned Scientists did a report last year where they looked at, they called it cradle to grave. So they looked at the cost of refining the oil, and also at the very beginning of where the energy, the electricity is created, and over the lifetime of the car, they are at a national average half the emissions of a traditional car. So obviously it depends on where the energy is sourced and how it's sourced. But in Florida, most of our electricity comes from natural gas. So they have a much, much lower emission than a traditional car. So, for example, if you switch from a traditional car to an electric only, you would save about 5,385 pounds of carbon emissions per year.
Cool. And maybe tell us about your Leaf and how you charge it.
So I purchased a used Nissan Leaf. It's a 2015 that came off of a lease, and there are quite a few of them available for $8,300. So cool. For under $10,000, we got an electric car. We have a solar system on our house, so I am charging my car on the sunshine, driving on sunshine.
Cool. What do you think about that, Rob?
That's really smart. Let's take a call from Gary in Sarasota. Gary, what's your question about electric cars and hybrids?
Hey, good morning. Love the show. My question is this. They say in 4 or 5 years, we're going to be about 30% electric. When I drive my car, I have road taxes and other taxes that I have to pay to the federal government via through the fuel system. At some point, are they going to be monitoring cars, or will you guys be paying per mile for road use?
Well, those are good questions. Gary, thanks a lot. You're breaking up a little bit, but I think I understand where you're headed with that. All right. So the question from Gary is, he's worried that electric cars aren't paying a fuel tax and aren't contributing to road maintenance and upkeep. And he's worried also, I think, it's fair to say that they may start to charge people for driving per mile, to add a per mile charge to your car. And Dory, let's start with you. What do you think about what would be your answer to those two questions?
Well, it is a very valid question. We have to pay for roads, and that money comes from taxes. Mm-hmm. So the question then becomes, if we're not paying the taxes in the form of gasoline, where the tax is coming from? And there have been studies out west where they have looked, and they are starting to try to formalize a policy of how to pay for the road tax when we are all at, you know, hybrid and electric vehicles. And one of the suggestions could be a per mile tax. You know, obviously, that gets complicated with trying to track how many miles you travel each year. What they have started instituting in some states is a user fee for electric vehicles. And unfortunately, in Georgia, for example, the fee is much higher than you would be paying in gasoline taxes. So it's almost disincentivizing driving electric. So, I mean, at this point, I don't, you know, with less than 1% of the vehicles on the road driving electric, I don't think that that's the biggest impact. I mean, overall nationally, what's happening with the, you know, higher efficiency with cars in general, that's where we're seeing the breakdown in funding that's available for roads. So certainly that needs to be explored.
And Todd, what would you say about that question about where to get money to maintain roads if we all move to electric cars or hybrid cars? And
I think everybody should pay their fair share. And, you know, as we move to more electric cars, then the vehicle registration fees could be adjusted. That's a question probably better left up for the legislators. And everybody should pay their fair share.
Well, you know, I just have to kind of, but I'm sorry, but, you know, it seems like we should pay our fair share of pollutant in the air, too. And that's the reason I always kind of thought, well, if you're going to use a petroleum product, that, you know, actually there should be some consequences. And I know this, you know, it's a difficult thing. It's just like here in Hillsborough County, we have the referendum coming up where they're going to put a sales tax on stuff, and you think about the poor people, the inner city people that maybe don't drive or anything. Now, true, they do use bus services, but the problem here is fossil fuel. That's the reason we have this program. That's the reason we're talking about sustainable living, and we're talking about forest fires. And I don't know, it just seems to me that it's definitely an incentive to do the right thing, right?
All right, so if you've got a question about electric cars or hybrids, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. You can also email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. We're talking with Todd Thompson, who runs a used car place where you sell, Todd, electric vehicles and hybrids, right?
That's correct.
And what's the name of the company again?
Tampa Hybrid.
Tampa Hybrid, all right. And Dory Larson is here with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and this is 88.5 FM. So are there any more tax breaks for purchasing an electric car or a hybrid car?
Thank you for asking that. Yes, so there is a federal tax credit that you can take up to $7,500, and it is dependent on the size of the battery. So some of the smaller battery plug-in hybrid electrics don't qualify for the full $7,500. A lot of states also offer a state income tax credit, but obviously since Florida doesn't have a state that we don't have that tax credit available to us. But there are sometimes utilities will offer, for example, JEA in Jacksonville will offer a check to people who drive electric.
Let's take another phone call. Nikki's in Largo. Nikki, you're on. What's your question?
I have a question. We'll be changing cars pretty soon. And I'd like to know what would be better, generally speaking, a hybrid or a total electric. We don't have charging here at home for an electric vehicle. And I don't have any idea how much it costs to, I'd like to know how much it costs to, you know, to put in a charging station at your home, and is it feasible? And I just like to know, you know, the difference between the hybrid and the total electric.
That's a great question. So we created a graphic. Our website is electrifythesouth.org, and it shows, because a lot of people are confused about what is electric or versus hybrid. So the way that we describe it is that an electric vehicle is a vehicle that takes electricity as an energy source. So it actually has a plug that can receive electricity. So there's a hybrid would be like the Toyota Prius, where it can just take gasoline. So that's a typical hybrid. A plug-in hybrid electric takes gasoline and electricity, and then a full electric vehicle can only take electricity. So to your question about installing the charging stations, you can buy quite a few level two charging stations for your home for under $500. And then as long as you have the capacity to install that 240-volt line, then you can have an electrician come out and do that for under $1,000.
Mm-hmm. And I would add to that is, for most people who are just commuting back and forth to work, a simple level one charger is sufficient, which plugs into any household outlet.
Yep, that's how I power my Nissan Leaf. I just use the level one charging with an outlet in my garage.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, if your commute isn't over a certain, you know, 45 miles each way a day, then you have enough time to recharge it in the evening like I do.
Uh-huh. Now, would your Leaf go, like, say, to Gainesville and back?
They can. It also depends on the model that you purchase, the charger that's on the vehicle. So my Nissan Leaf does not have a CHAdeMO charger, which is the DC fast charger, but mm-hmm. A lot of models do. So that's definitely one thing that you want to look at when you're purchasing an electric vehicle.
What does that mean? What is a DC fast charger? What's the advantage of having that on your car?
So the regular charger is a J1772 outlet, and it can take level one charging, which is a regular 120-volt outlet, like I described, that I plug in at home with a traditional outlet. Level two charging is what you will typically find with a charging station like you have that you can install at your home, or that you will see at workplace charging, or that you see out in the community. And then level three charging is what they call DC fast charging. So instead of an AC alternating current, you get DC direct current that charges the car much faster.
Can you give us an idea of the relative times of the charge? How long would it take for the fast charger?
The fast charger can fully recharge can charge about 80% in about half an hour.
And what about the slow one? How long does that take?
It depends if it's level one or level two. So level one, you get about typically 5 miles per hour. And then the level two, it usually doubles it.
Mm-hmm. What's the range of your Leaf? How far can you go?
So the range on mine is, it's rated at 84 miles, but I typically can get much more than that because I drive it more efficiently. You know, I take my foot off the pedal when I see the car in front of me stopping. So it regenerative, you know, it uses that regenerative braking, and I can get typically 95 miles.
Wow. Cool. Nikki, thanks for the question.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm
I didn't know about it. I seems like I'm most intrigued by the plug-in chargeable hybrid. May I ask another question?
Sure, go ahead.
Which model do you recommend, or is that a good question?
I mean, there are over 40 models currently available between strict electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. You can see the range of them, the cost, and the range that they travel on our website as well under the electric vehicle options.
Maybe Todd has an answer for that question.
The answer to that question is going to vary greatly depending on your driving style. There are certain cars that are just better suited for certain commutes. So, for example, if you drive 20 miles to work and 20 miles back, then you've got a 40-mile commute. A Chevy Volt will typically do that on pure electric. If you go a little further, it reverts to a gas charging system, which is called a range extender, and you can go farther, so you can travel across the country with it if you wish. Now, something like a Prius plug-in has a 12 to 14 mile electric only range, whereas a Nissan Leaf is a pure electric and will go anywhere from 70 to 90 miles depending how you drive it without charging in between. If you have the ability to charge at work as well, it doubles your range.
Todd, what electric vehicle has the longest range?
Well, I would say the Teslas probably have the highest. The new Chevy Bolt, with a B, has a rated 238-mile range. However, my wife's been driving one for the last 2 months, and she's getting close to 300 miles.
Wow.
All right, so that answers the question of a drive to Gainesville. Tesla or the Chevy Bolt?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Nikki, thanks a lot.
What's the website again?
ElectrifyTheSouth.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, Nikki, thanks a lot. And you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Vinny, who's in Tampa. Vinny, what's your question for our guests?
Yes, good morning, guys. 88.5, I listen to most of the time.
Thank you.
I got two questions on electric vehicle that you guys be discussing. Question number one, when are we going to have most gas stations on the highway have outlets to charge these cars? Because you have to have outlets somewhere to charge these cars. Are we looking into this?
There's actually quite an infrastructure right now that people aren't even aware of. There are certain apps you can get on your phone and websites to go to, such as ChargePoint and PlugShare, are two of my favorites. And you can find a pretty wide range of charging stations currently. There's new ones going in all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm looking to put some in places around the city of Tampa if anybody's interested and talk to me about that. But all you need is a regular outlet for charging as well. So there's a lot of different options currently, and it keeps getting better.
And Todd, a lot of those charging stations are not at gas stations. There are places like restaurants and movie theaters around town, parking garages around town. You don't necessarily look for a charging station at a gas station. That's kind of old-fashioned, right?
Correct. You see a lot of them at malls. Whole Foods typically has one at all their locations. Some libraries, YMCAs have them. Dunkin' Donuts has put quite a few in a lot of their locations.
It's really a paradigm shift in the way that we look at fueling our vehicles. So you would not probably see level 3 charging throughout town. You would mostly find those along highway systems because people would need to be able to charge quickly and then get back on the road. Whereas with level 2 charging, like Todd said, if you're going to go to the movies, you can charge for a couple of hours and get another 40 miles back on your vehicle and ready to go. So it's a completely different way of looking at how we fuel our vehicles.
And I understand a lot of the dealerships have quick charging and charging stations too. Not that maybe you want to go there, but
right. Yeah, I.
Todd, you have a charging station there?
We have two of them here.
Cool.
All right, Vinny. How's that for your question?
Yeah. Well. Okay. Yeah. I understand. I was just really referring to the highways when you're mostly on the highways, and around the city as well. So basically what you're saying is that they are up there. They're out there.
And to get the app.
And can I make another point to that as well? There is, with the Volkswagen settlement, a lot of money that's going to be coming to the state of Florida, $166 million. And we have the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and others have advocated that the state maximize that 15% go to the electric vehicle infrastructure and paying, helping to pay for some of that. In addition to that, Tesla has their own supercharging infrastructure, and they just said last week that 99% of the population is within 150 miles of a Tesla supercharger. So they are ubiquitous through the country, and you can really find what you need.
Vinny, thanks a lot for your questions. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Just another question I wanted to say, just to mention that, knowing that gas prices is going, we know when it used to be way up there. And everyone was buying, maybe 5 years ago, electric cars. The gas price shrinks. It's down to one of the lowest now. And in the future, it will be lesser. Do you think electric car will still be like, you know, a priority sales as is right now?
So it costs about...
The gas prices is low?
Yes, because it costs about 3.5 cents a mile to fuel an electric car. If we have charging rates that we do in the Tampa Bay area, about 11 cents a kilowatt. Whereas a typical electric car, or I'm sorry, a typical gas car costs about 10 cents a mile. And that's if gas is at 250 a gallon. So right now, I believe it's higher than that. So to spend a third of the cost on fueling is certainly an incentive to drive electric.
All right, Vinny, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Do the charging stations charge you when you're charging your car, or is the electricity free at a charging station?
It depends. A lot of the cities have installed the charging stations, and it's free to charge there. But you can also find charging stations that do there is a cost to charge. And like Todd said, if you look on the ChargePoint app, it usually will tell you the cost if there is one associated with fueling at that charging station.
Well, that's Dory Larson with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Todd Thompson is on the phone with us. He's with Tampa Hybrids. John Butts is here, of course, and you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program on 88.5 FM. Todd, let me ask you real quickly, you talked about the reliability of these cars. These cars do not have radiators if they're a full electric car, and they don't have a typical transmission. Potentially, when you look at a Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf or a Tesla, what's the life expectancy of that car?
Well, you basically have tires and wiper blades and a cabin air filter as your basic maintenance. For some reason, Nissan recommends changing the brake fluid every 15,000 miles, but there's some internet debate about whether that's actually needed. I think it's more of a reason to get you to come in and visit and possibly, sell something else. But very minimal maintenance on these cars at all, because you're eliminating the gas engine, which is typically the oil changes and the spark plugs and the filters and water pumps, all that's gone.
So how many miles? I mean, any estimate, if we were to go out and buy a Leaf or a Tesla or a Bolt, are we talking about 200,000 miles? Are we talking about 300,000? Are we talking about 400,000 miles?
Well, typically people who buy a Leaf today are using it for commuting, so you're not seeing people racking up the huge mileage that you would typically see on a Prius. I think the highest mileage I've ever seen on a Leaf is 120 or 130. But we are a repair shop here as well. Other than tires and wiper blades and cabin filters, I've never had any major services on a Leaf. The Prius, which people typically will drive and they use them for taxi cabs, and they'll put 100,000 miles a year on them. I've seen those with 700,000 to 800,000 miles with original engines.
Wow.
Sometimes original hybrid batteries.
That's incredible.
800,000 miles.
Now, Sven writes this, are they fun to drive? Are Priuses fun to drive, he asks. And does anybody race Priuses? That's Sven's question.
I don't know if fun is the word. It's not a Mustang convertible. It's a it's a good practical car to get back and forth. They're very comfortable, very spacious. That's one thing that surprises people a lot about a Prius, is how much room there actually is in one. The acceleration is good. It's by no means a race car, but it gets up and goes and gets out in traffic, and then it'll go 100 miles an hour if you want it to. But it's certainly not a race car.
My first experience, my husband has a Prius, so my first experience in an electric car was when I test drove one, and I was reluctant to pull out onto US 19, you know, because I wasn't sure about the get up and go, and I did not realize that they have instant torque. So that's one of the electric, pure electric cars really are a lot of fun to drive. The fastest car in the world is a Tesla that can get 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. I mean, that's incredible.
Well, John, you have Big Daddy Don Garlitz on your show here about 3 or 4 years ago, and he was racing an electric car a few years ago.
Well, it's like they say, it's instant torque. You know, the gasoline, internal combustion is very inefficient. Now, you know, gasoline's very dense as far as energy, but it's like off the line. You can't beat an electric car. And they race motorcycles, and they're winning races all over the world. And, you know, like, there's a change. There's a definite change. You know, we talk about racing, but anything to promote this technology, I think it's good.
Well, we're talking about hybrid and electric cars, and our guests are Dory Larson with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and Todd Thompson with a business in Lutz called Tampa Hybrids, and this is the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts on 88.5 FM. Sue writes this: my 2014 Prius is awesome, but each year seems to get lower average miles. It's dropped over time. Is this normal, or is there something I should be doing to keep the mileage from dropping? Writes Sue.
This is a common question I get. I've seen 2004 Priuses with 400,000 miles that are still getting 50 miles per gallon. And it's just a matter of keeping your vehicle maintained properly. There's also other things. Driving style makes a huge difference. Obviously, that probably hasn't changed year after year if it's the same person. But seasonally, you'll lose a little mileage. In the summer in Florida, we use the air conditioning more. Your mileage will drop. Tires make a huge difference on a Prius. There are tires that are actually made specifically for electric and hybrid cars called low rolling resistant tires. And getting that type of tire and inflating them properly can make 5 to 6 miles per gallon difference on a Prius. And then just good general maintenance, oil changes, filters, spark plugs, changing the transmission fluid. These things can all help restore mileage.
All right. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Let's go to Bob, who's in Rogersville, Tennessee. And Bob, you're on WMNF. What would you like to ask our guest?
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to chime in a little bit on the economy of driving an electric. My wife and I, we bought a Chevy Bolt back in December of 2017. And we snowbird. We have an apartment in St. Pete, and then we have a house up here in Rogersville. And in St. Pete, in the apartment building, they provide chargers, 5 chargers on each floor of the parking garage attached to it. And here in Tennessee, we have very, very good electric rates, about 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Works out to about 120 miles per gallon. So we found it to be very efficient and very cost effective.
All right. Bob, thanks a lot. Thanks for your account. Good to hear from you. And let's go to Tony in Tampa. Tony, what would you like to say?
Well, I was listening to the conversation about the cost per mile, and the woman there was saying that it's about 3.5 cents for an electric car and about 10 cents per mile on the average gas vehicle. But when you incorporate the vast majority, not the vast majority, but a lot of our petroleum gas costs at the pump are taxes. So if you were to factor in, you know, a lot of people say it's 70%. If you were to, assign the same level of taxation to the per mile or per gallon or per equal, you know, BTU or however you want to convert it, energy, it may get to where the cost is different per mile. I didn't know if they've ever ran any hard numbers like that, or they've tried to to evaluate it from a, you know, a gas equivalency as far as either BTUs or however. That's it. I'll listen offline.
All right, Tony, thanks a lot. I'm going to look up those numbers on what percent of the gallon of gas cost is taxes. But, Dory, do you want to take that, or should we hand it over to Todd?
I would defer to Todd on that.
This is really outside of my area of expertise.
Okay. So I was looking it up, and Wikipedia says in the U.S., the federal excise tax on gasoline is 18.4 cents per gallon. And 24.4 cents per gallon for diesel fuel. Now, that doesn't count the state taxes and if there's a local tax. But so if we're paying right now $2.66 or $2.70 a gallon, out of that, 18 cents is the federal excise tax. Now, we'll have to look up what the other taxes are, but I don't think it's 70% of the taxes. I think Tony might have gotten that wrong. But, Tony, thanks for that. The sound guy writes this: I have rooftop solar installed in my homes. Are there additional benefits with that and an electric car? I'm also getting ready to buy a Leaf. Another benefit is no oil changes, fluid changes, etc. Much less repair costs, writes sound guy. So is there any benefit if I have a solar system installed in my home and I have an electric car? Or I guess he's getting a tax benefit. You think that's...
I'm not sure what he's if he's referring to the tax benefits, but I mean, there is a 30% federal tax credit for installing solar on your roof. So maybe that's what he's referring to. But in terms of the benefits to the environment, I mean, you're, instead of looking at the emissions that might be there associated with creating the electricity, there are virtually zero with solar energy. So I would say that that's definitely the added bonus of driving on solar.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was going to ask Nancy's question. You know, they live in Lake Panasoffkee. They're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and she's wanting a car that isn't an internal combustion engine, which kind of really limits what she has available to her. Now, you know, I've kind of mentioned the Volt, but anyhow, real quick, what would you say to Nancy? I mean, they don't live in a city. They live in the country.
I mean, I guess it would depend on how many miles she drives a day and what her needs are, because that certainly plays into what vehicle would be most appropriate. I mean, it's exciting to know, though, that there are also electric pickup trucks that are coming. There's a Workhorse company in Ohio that manufactures electric pickup trucks, and Daimler and Peterbilt and Cummins, all big trucking companies, are investing a lot of money in building class 4 through 8 electric trucks as well, heavy duty truck. So it's,
well, you know, I understand the mail service too is looking into, you know, like we're going to have a whole fleet of electric mail trucks.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. We're almost at the end of the show. Todd Thompson at Tampa Hybrids, if people want to contact you and maybe have a question about hybrids or some of the things that you've raised, how can people get in touch with you?
Probably the best way is just through my website, which is pretty simple, TampaHybrids.com. I've got a lot of frequently asked questions answered on my website, as well as current inventory.
All right, that sounds good. And Dory Larson with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, if people want to find out more, how can they find out more?
So you can go to electrifythesouth.org and also follow us on Facebook, Electrify the South. My email address is Dory, D-O-R-Y, at cleanenergy.org.
And Dory, you mentioned an app where people can find charging stations around the country. What was that app again?
So there's PlugShare, which is non-proprietary, and then there's ChargePoint.
Okay. Jamie writes this, John. Jamie says, was hoping that you would mention the Hernando chapter of the Florida Native Plant Society's annual fall native plant sale, located on the beautiful Chinsigut Retreat Grounds in Brooksville, Saturday, September 15th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and there is no charge for this.
Well, yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, Rob. I just wanted to say the WMNF Sustainable Living Show Facebook page, I posted an article that was recently in Home Power about the next generation of electric vehicles. So I thought it was really nice. I tried to get them on, but anyhow, you can see that and read that article.
Can I also plug real quick? Drive Electric Week is coming up September 8th through 16th nationwide. It's actually worldwide. And there are a couple of events in the Tampa Bay area. So Newport Richey is going to have an event on September the 8th. Sarasota has got an event on the 8th and the 15th. And Hillsborough County has one on the 12th.
All right. Well, Dory Larson, thanks a lot. Todd Thompson, thank you. John, thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. This is WMNF Tampa.